Welcome to Another Dose, the GEMS podcast where EMS meets ED to talk about trending topics in emergency medical services. I'm Dr. Candace McDonald.
And I'm Robin Goldinger, and we'd like to welcome you to today's show.
So what's up, Another Dose listeners? This is Women's History Month, and today we're going to talk about empowering women in emergency medical services. Men, don't you go anywhere. Keep listening because we need your help with this. And we have two really great guests today. But before we get started, I do want to take a moment and recognize the tremendous, I'm going to try to do this without crying, the tremendous loss that the Fire and Emergency Medical Services experienced this week. Heather Schaefer, she was the National Volunteer Fire Council CEO. She passed away unexpectedly this week. And, you know, Heather was a true pioneer and a leader in our field, in a field that has about 11% women. She was a strong influencer and leader. She's been a role model to so many, including me. Our thoughts and our prayers are with her family and the NVFC family as they try to recoup this loss. And I know our first guest, Chief Deb Prendergast, was very familiar with the impact Heather's had on our industry. And Chief, I want to welcome you to the show and allow you to introduce yourself and share about your background.
Thank you, Candace. Definitely a big loss to the fire service. Very sad to hear about that. So my name is Deb Prendergast. I'm currently the State of New Hampshire Fire Training Director. It is a chief position within the state agencies. We also, besides being the state agency that does all of the firefighter training and certification, we're also the agency that does all oversees all education and state licensing of every EMT in the state of New Hampshire. So that's my current position. I'm just finishing out my eighth year there. Previous to that, I was an assistant chief of a medium-sized fire department here in the state of New Hampshire, and I was there for 10 years and oversaw the training and operations and worked directly under the fire chief in that position. Previous to that, a little bit further south in the state, I started out as a volunteer, did a couple of years as a volunteer, became a call firefighter, and then decided I wanted to make a career of this. At 30 years old, by the way, this is a second career for me. Altogether, I've been in the fire service for 28 years and I've been an EMT for 29 years. So I feel like I've got a pretty good background just because I've done, you know, the career, the volunteer, part-time, full-time, and have really, really enjoyed it. As Candace said earlier, I'm close to retirement, but I intend to keep my foot in the door, and I'll be continuing part-time in both fire and EMS. But glad to be here with you tonight. Thank you, Candace.
Yeah, thank you.
And Melissa, tell us about you.
Happy to. Well, Deb, nice to meet you. And Candace and Robin, thanks for having me on the podcast. This is my first ever podcast, so pretty exciting. I'm currently a nurse leader at University Hospitals Health System in Cleveland, Ohio, serving in the role currently as Vice President for Integrated Delivery Operations, which includes emergency medicine, urgent cares as sort of our unplanned access domains. Also, have been reassigned home care, traditional home care, but also looking at an acute hospital at home program, our care transition team, and our post-acute spaces. So have a pretty big portfolio now and learning a lot of new things. I'm a born and raised Clevelander, started my career here, went to Ursuline College, became a nurse. Worked at the Cleveland Clinic for a while, was a new grad in the neuro ICU, became a clinical educator, and then moved to Tampa, Florida for 10 years and worked for a variety of institutions in the Tampa area. So worked for a for-profit organization as a critical care nurse manager and became the neuroscience director and started building stroke programs, and then moved to a large teaching hospital down there where I got into trauma program management, and I decided I wanted to go back to school to become a nurse practitioner, and did a clinical rotation in emergency department and fell in love with the environment. And so I currently practice also as a nurse practitioner in emergency medicine, seeing adult patients only, and came back home about 4 years ago and landed at University Hospitals and really excited. Been here about 4 years and started in emergency medicine and then have grown from there. So that's kind of the synopsis.
So you missed snow? Impressive.
Yeah.
What did you say, Candace? Did she miss the snow?
You missed the snow? So you came back to Ohio from Tampa?
Actually, I'll tell you, it's a funny story. So I've got two kids. I've got a 12-year-old daughter now and an 8-year-old son. And my son was about 3 and I was reading him a book about a red sled. And he's like, Mom, what's a sled? And I was like, I can't raise a kid that doesn't know what a sled is. You know, there's all this. So there is, I would say after living in perpetual summer for 10 years, there's magic to seasonal changes. And so our kids are skiers and learning to ice skate and do all the fun things that you can do in winter that you don't get to experience. Oh, the beach gets old.
Well,
I disagree, but I haven't lived there.
So. Yeah. And I think Deb takes the award for having more snow than all of us. So
we've definitely got some here in New England for sure.
Yeah. So
you can keep it.
Well, thank you, Melissa, so much for being here. We look forward to, as we go through today and ask you some of these questions, we look forward to hearing from you and sharing some of your experiences and your wisdom with our listeners. And, you know, a lot of times people will ask me, I don't understand why we need to have Women's History Month. I don't understand why we have to talk about women's issues, but they don't realize that when with fire and with EMS, that when we're in an industry, when it's a male dominated field, there are specific issues and challenges that pertain to women. And I have to laugh because when my husband became a nurse, things flipped for him. He went from firefighter, paramedic to nurse. And when he was going through nursing school, he says, they only have scrubs for females. I'm like, oh, welcome to my world. And we went to 3 counties trying to find scrubs for males. And we'd go into these stores and they'd have one tiny little rack for him in all of these uniform stores. He's like, I can't find anything. And then even at graduation, they told the guys, you have to wear what the women are wearing. You can't deviate. He didn't go to graduation. But you know, it was eye-opening for him to see. And I explained to him, this is a challenge that women in fire and EMS have experienced for years. And it's just a little challenge. It doesn't even get into some of the other bigger issues. So that's why we have to continue to talk about these things and keep progressing forward. And we've moved leaps and bounds to where we've started, but it's good to celebrate those victories and continue to talk about some challenges and help our fellow sisters move forward as they grow in their career. So the first question that I have, Deb, that I want to ask you, and because I truly admire you and all of your achievements, you're definitely somebody many of us look up to, but what advice do you have for women who are looking to grow their own career?
I think probably the most important thing, if you've got a career, if you fell into something, fire, EMS, healthcare, whatever it is, if you fell into something that you really love, try not to be stagnant. Don't just go for the status quo. Well, I like my job. I'm just going to continue on. For myself, education is so important. So started out as, you know, a basic EMT and really wanted to continue up and at the time, there was an intermediate EMT. Now I'm an advanced EMT. Always looking to kind of what's that next step? What should I aspire to? So definitely education is one thing. But I think for women also sort of having the courage, applying for a chief job or a chief officer job or a director of an EMS service, for example. You know, as women, we sort of say, well, I'm not sure I'm ready. I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I have enough training. I don't have enough education. I haven't been doing this long enough. And it's really a matter of having the confidence in yourself. If you know you're good at what you do and you've got a good resume behind you, you know, be courageous. Take that step. Put your application in for that job. So, don't be stagnant. You know, get the education you think you need. Have a vision of where you would like to be. I can tell you within my first 3 years of being in the fire service, I knew or suspected someday that I would like to end up in a chief's position. So sort of having that goal every couple of years, you know, taking steps to get closer to that goal.
Yeah, thank you.
Melissa, you've kind of had it from both sides as well, being a bedside nurse and doctors were men. And now you are a practitioner and you're a female and you're high up in our leadership chain with the men. How do you deal with that? How do you promote women?
You know, that's a great question. I think sometimes women are our own worst enemy, right? So I think women needed to support other women. And so many times I find, you know, sometimes it's a challenge, I would say, being in a position where sometimes women can find themselves being jealous of other success. So I think, you know, the men in the room make it difficult as well when sometimes if you don't feel like you're being heard, right? So I think my advice would be, you know, as a woman, find your brand, find out what you stand for, where your integrity is, and stand by that all the time, whether it's women or men. You know, I think when you have your brand that you want to be known for, whether it's courageous or being bold or being a good listener, whatever those behaviors are that you want to emulate, it helps to kind of keep you centered to get you through whatever that adversity might be in any position within the organization. I think we're faced, you know, especially in healthcare, with adversity all the time, right? And so I think having that centeredness about you to find out what it is you stand for and then standing by that helps to be, at least for me, my compass and my center of gravity, if you would.
Yeah. Very good. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Integrity is so important. And, you know, one of the things that you touched on is sometimes, you know, that whole jealousy thing. And I think, you know, what I have witnessed over the years, especially for a lot of women, when we've been the first in our department to be a first female firefighter, whatever, we work so hard to claim our spot that we start, when somebody else comes in, we start to put up these walls instead of helping our sisters out and saying, oh, you know what, come on, let me help you, because we're so afraid. And so I think it goes to about, I always tell everybody, we got to flip that script. What can we do different? What can we, you know, because it's so important to support one another and to remove our own securities and realize that there is a place for everybody at the table.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and in thinking about that, you know, mentorship is so important. You know, we can be a good mentor to other women. We can be a good mentor to men. I've had some fabulous mentors that have been both men and women, you know, and I know, Deb, you know, Steve Austin, he's been my mentor for years. I call him, you know, I said, you're like my father in the fire service, and I'm so grateful for your mentorship. So, Deb, how do you feel when it comes to mentoring? How important is it to have a mentor to help you grow as a leader? And what are some steps to build that type of relationship? How do you find a mentor?
Sure. Great question, Candace. You know, as you go through your career and you're thinking of what the next step is, sometimes, again, we question ourselves, and it's good to have somebody else who has experience, who's been in the position a long time, or is in the position that you're aspiring to. So throughout my career, I've had both formal and informal mentors. I've actually only had one formal mentor where I actually sat down, spoke with the fire chief that I worked with and asked him specifically. But I was very specific about what type of mentoring I was looking for. You know, again, as you sort of plan out your future and saying someday I want to be in a fire chief position, the part that was missing for me was the financial part of it. I had done training budgets. I had done, you know, small pieces of a budget, but to get an entire, you know, city fire department budget and know what percentages go where. So I actually, for a little over a year, formally mentored with my chief. And by the end of that year period, he actually had me put the fire department budget together. So very effective. And so how you go about doing it is you find somebody that's got maybe some tools that you feel you could use, and you sit down and you ask them. I think it's important to be very specific on what you want the result to be. And as far as informal mentors, I know, Candace, you know Chief Mary Beth Mikos. Oh, yes. She might surprised to hear her name mentioned here, but she's somebody that early on I saw her as a leader when she was a chief of EMS and a chief of department, and she's won awards. And she was somebody that I looked up to very early in my career and have sort of followed her career path. And now she's still very successful, even though she's retired from the fire and EMS. But so again, an informal mentorship is sort of following somebody's career path, looking at how they got to where, you know, where they ended up and that sort of thing. But definitely very important to see yourself progressing through your career.
Yeah. Mary Beth, she's this such a question, great person. So, oops, sorry, Robin.
No, you're fine. So this question's really interesting. I'm glad that we're bringing it up because I recently reached out to Melissa about mentoring and how I could, who I could reach out, how I could get a mentor for UH from, or anybody. And she kind of guided me, but tell us a little bit about your mentoring experience, Melissa.
I don't know where I would be without mentors. So early on in my career as a baby nurse, you know, we enter a profession where, you know, it's known that nurses eat their young, right? So, you know, when we talked a little bit about the last question, you know, that came to mind. And I think actually nursing is starting to get out of that mentality. I do see a lot more support. But my first mentor in my first job, you know, I was a fierce patient advocate, fierce. And I, she taught me I could get more with honey than I can with vinegar, but I felt like all the residents were trying to, you know, get in the way of delivering good patient care, right? And so I would ask a lot of questions, and part of it was that I wanted to learn, but part of it was I didn't know how to communicate appropriately to really come from it from an inquisition standpoint rather than what could have came across as an accusatory standpoint. So this mentor, God bless her. I mean, I would send her every email before I would send it to make sure that it sounded good. I would go in her office if I was upset and needed to blow off steam. And, you know, being new into a profession, learning that level of professionalism and how to communicate effectively and to understand some of the politics and bureaucracy that exist in a lot of the healthcare system, I was so naive. I mean, I was 23 years old, you know, I just was trying to get by and do my job and be a patient advocate and do the right thing. But learning how to do that in an effective way, I mean, I owe a lot to my first mentor. And because I had such a great relationship with my first mentor, I have sought both formal and informal mentorship throughout my career to help me with any of my blind spots, right? You know, perception is reality, and being able to understand how other people are perceiving you and then changing maybe the way you're doing something so that you can be perceived the way you really want to be perceived. So having those sets of eyes on you, helping you to give you confidence when maybe it didn't feel like you had the confidence to be there. So the support has also been amazing. So I usually find a mentor that I'm a little bit afraid of. They're usually in higher positions, right? They scare me a little bit, which I think is a good thing because it's that level of respect and aspiration. You know, they usually, you know, after the first few sessions, I usually get more comfortable and we have a pretty open relationship. And most of my mentors, I still keep in touch with today. So my first mentor that I mentioned, I'm still friends with her, and this is 20 years later. So those are really special relationships most of the time. And I owe a lot of my career and my professional growth and personal growth to a lot of them.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's awesome to have those people, even, you know, in your little circle. You know, I do stuff like read this email before I send it so I don't sound bad, or we'll like, okay, I have to go talk to this person, practice with me. And she'll say, it's my assistant manager. She'll go, no, reword, start over. Okay. I'm sorry that no, don't say it that way. So it's just really good to have people to guide you. And when you don't know how to do something the right way. So, and you can edit all that out, 'cause I just sounded really stupid.
No.
That's exactly what a mentor is there for. And sometimes, and I think mentors show up differently in your life for different things that you need. But those perceptions, right? And to understand, because how it's going to be perceived by others, I mean, that's extremely valuable, which is exactly mm-hmm. what you said. You're, you know, maybe you use your mentor for, and I've used mine a lot of my career.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that you said is that, and I thought that was very important, was you said about finding some mentors that you might be afraid of or that might intimidate you. I think, you know, I've always said it's good to find people that are in places where you want to go and ask them, can you help me map out my journey? Because I want to be like you one day, you know, and being able to approach them. When I started at NASA, I was paired with my mentor. He was a retired Army drill sergeant, and he made me cry on my first day. And I was terrified of him. But by the end of our, like, we are so close, and it was neat. I've learned so much from him, and we balance each other out. And he says, you've made me a better person, a better worker, because I've learned better people skills. Cause I'll remind him, like, John, we need to work on your people skills, you know, when he gets a little abrasive, but we've developed that relationship. So it is, and he's one of the smartest people that I know. But I think what you said is so important, is that we need to be willing to step out of our comfort zone and ask people that are in positions, you know, places that we want to end up in our career, and say, hey, how do we get there? You know, can you provide me with some advice? And the other thing that you said, I think was important, is that we have mentors that they serve in different roles for us in different areas mm-hmm. of our life. And so you can never have too many mentors. So the next thing that I kind of want to talk about, and Deb, you know, you said something so important earlier. You mentioned about having the courage, you know, to chase those goals and chase those dreams. And so how do you, when it comes to that, you know, and you're looking at somebody's who's successful, you know, sometimes as women, you know, we can have that self-doubt, or we can let our insecurities get in the way, and then we become afraid. You know, how do we address that? How do we address some of those inner critics, so to speak, in our head when we admire somebody else, so that we can approach them and to work with them and to be more like them?
Yeah, that's something really good to think about. And we have to look at people, like, very rarely do we meet somebody that's the whole package, right? Has the perfect personality, all the leadership skills, all the education. You know, they're rare that we find somebody that's exactly everything they're supposed to be. So when you meet folks like that, I always look at, well, what are those things that really stand out to me that I could maybe reach out to this person and benefit from? You know, is it their people skills, their emotional intelligence, you know, their leadership traits, things like that. But it's also important for yourself to say, you know, well, I know I'm not the whole package either, but what are my strengths? What are the things that I'm really good at that I can feel good about myself? And I think, you know, earlier on in our careers, as we sort of break into this world, we have more doubts and we have less of those things that we know we're good at. As I got older and a little bit wiser, I'm not afraid to say that I am good at. My people skills are good. My background is psychology, good at emotional intelligence, good at team morale. You know, I know what motivates people, things like that. So it's good to look at a person that you aspire to and really say, what do I like about that person? What are some of the traits or skills that they have that I can, you know, pull some of the good qualities that they have and add them to my package?
Yeah, absolutely.
Melissa, some of the things that I've noticed about you and have admired about you is when you go into a meeting or into a room with a lot of higher up people, you are confident and you own the room. You're not afraid to stand down or fight your battle, and you do it very well. How do you get that far? How do you step forward out of your comfort zone and, you know, man up to that challenge?
Well, no, I picture everybody in their underwear. No.
Okay, gross. I know some of those people.
That old adage. No, one, thank you very much for the compliment. I would say sometimes on the inside, I don't feel as confident, I guess, as it's being portrayed. And I think the way that I've learned to approach one, you have your integrity that's on the inside that you're ultimately staying true to, right? So if you're doing something for myself, my true north is if we're doing something right for patients and people, then it's probably the right thing to do. But how you go about doing that varies, right? And people also, I think we have to assume positive intent, which is we've got to assume that entire room wants to do the same thing you want to do, right? Which is that true north patient-centric approach, right? That we want to do the right thing for patients. So I try to take it from that angle that everybody in the room wants to kind of get to the same place. And I also need to understand that my answer or my thought that I have may not be the right solution. So I have to get curious about where other people are coming from in the room. And usually when you get any sort of resistance, I find it's fear, I don't have the resources, or fear of failure or whatever. And we need to take time to explore some of that, right? So rather than getting defensive or defending my position per se, I try to seek to understand and get curious to find out, all right, where are you coming from? Help me understand. And maybe they've got a little bit better slant on the idea than I have, right? So I try to be open and listen. And so even though I went in thinking, okay, we're going to do this, maybe we're going to get to that end point, but the way we go about doing it might be different than what I had in mind. And that's okay, as long as it stays true to that base core, you know, that integrity, right? And what you stand for. And, you know, I think we're lucky in healthcare because we're all there to do the right thing for patients. So that gives us already a compass to follow. And so I think it's easy for us to rally around that, but it's humbling to hear that I sound and portray myself with so much confidence, but I'll tell you, most of the time I'm going in and I'm pretty nervous and, you know, I'm wondering if it's going to go the right way. And what if I say the wrong thing? I mean, even this podcast has, you know, I'm sweating, my feet are sweating, my hands are sweating. What if I say something wrong? So, so I think that's how, if we try to take it from an angle that we're all there to learn, we're all there to do the right thing. And if we're meeting resistance, then rather than defend it, then get curious, lean into it, and probably come up with a better solution than you had anticipated in the beginning.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Great answer. I completely, you know, I think that was some great insight. And I think sometimes we're all a little afraid on the inside, but we just got to jump in there and lead. So, you know, I know as women and even our men listeners, we're all very busy. You know, we have other things outside of our career. And so for those of us that are in the volunteer world listening, you know, you've got your regular career, you have your volunteer EMS role, and then your family and everything else. And so whether you're in career or volunteer, this all applies, but we're trying to balance all this work life, volunteer balance, whatever it is. So I guess the question becomes, and a lot of times people ask, how do you do that? How do you balance your career, your personal life, and your passions so that you can be successful? And Deb, I'm going to start with you. You know, what have been your tricks? What has worked for you over the years to try to balance everything so that you could achieve your goals?
That's actually, I found in my life to be a moving target. So when I started out early on in my career, I had 3 young girls at home. So to me, you know, what are your priorities? And family to me was certainly my priority. So as far as balancing, if you weren't at work, then I was driving girls to soccer games and basketball games and things like that. But as they got older and as I, you know, got the education that I wanted and needed and moved throughout my career, I find now that, again, I'm wiser. I'm thinking I do need more time outside of my career. My current position is a lot of stress, a lot of long hours, nights and weekends at times, which I'm sure is the same for Melissa in healthcare. Probably it's not just a 9-to-5 day. I'm finding it is more important to take time. I'm a person that, well, Candace said earlier, I have a farm, so my animals there's times I'll go out and talk to them, you know, if I'm having a stressful day, but certainly physical activity has always been important to me. My husband and I are now climbing, New Hampshire has 48 mountains that are 4,000 feet or taller. So we're hitting the 4,000 footers on weekends and climbing mountains. And it just, it really grounds you. Even going outside for a 15-minute walk, take the dogs out for a walk, come back in, and I feel like you can just dump your stress by doing a little bit of self-care. So the balance, like I said, I think over the years, the balance did shift a little bit. I find now I'm taking the time that I need to have that away from work time. Whereas, again, as I was younger and my children were younger, it was more difficult to do, definitely. You were either at work or with the kids and very rarely doing anything that, you know, that was mindfulness or grounding, or you were always involved in something.
How about you, Melissa? How are you doing the skiing and everything and work and all of that?
Yeah, no, I think as I'm listening to Deb, there are sprints and marathons in our life, right? And sometimes you gotta just hunker down and get a sprint done and you just know it's gonna sink, right? But it's for a short period of time. And currently I'm in a little bit of a sprint, right? I'm in school, getting a graduate degree. I'm, you know, a mom of two small kids. I luckily have a awesome husband and partner to be able to share some of the responsibilities, which I think helps out a lot. You know, and I have a pretty demanding job. So there are sprints and there are marathons, but I think ultimately you're in charge of your calendar, right? And so nobody else controls that. And so I block time at certain times to exercise. I also agree, physical activity is a huge thing for me. I think I have a little bit of ADHD, so making sure that I get that that energy out daily is really important. And I used to be a 5 a.m. wake upper, get it done. And now since life has gotten a little different with COVID and the pandemic, I've had this sort of rebalance and reshift. So you're catching me after a workout today. So, you know, you've got to, you get it in when you can get it in. And, you know, some things you can delegate, right? Or you can reprioritize. And I think you're right. I think, Deb, there are certain times in your life where your other things are going to be prioritized, whether it's, you know, getting to my kid's soccer game, it's probably going to take precedence over a 6 o'clock meeting. And how do I make sure that I'm still informed and my, you know, opinions or values can still be known? So with the computer, I feel like we have a lot of ways to stay connected, which is a good thing, but I think also allowing us time to disconnect in blocks of time is really important. So I really encourage saying no sometimes is an important, it's a complete sentence.
Yes.
And sometimes that's the answer. And, you know, balancing that though, especially as women in leadership, leaning into things as well and understanding we may need to sprint and creating a support network to help you do that. So it is balance. I think it does shift throughout our life, like Deb, and setting yourself up for success. If you know it's a sprint, just know it's a sprint, put your head down, go through it. And if it's a marathon, then rebalance and reprioritize.
You feel really good after you finish that sprint though, that you push through it and you're like, wow, how did I manage that? But I did it.
Yeah. And it's, yes, you do feel great, but it is not long-term. It's
no.
The time. And time could be a couple years, right? A sprint could be a couple years when you think of your lifetime. But I'm also a big proponent of taking time off. You know, I think over the last year, especially with COVID, not being able to go anywhere, I have felt that start to weigh on me, you know, constantly being in the grind for a year, you know, and obviously during the pandemic, healthcare, as you mentioned, Robin, I mean, we had to undergo some major changes and figure things out on the fly. And that took a lot of resources and intensive critical thinking and emotional expenditure. So, you know, I think the importance of really stepping away and recharging ourselves, both in little ways and taking vacations and really being able to unplug, help you come back, you know, help me come back a better leader, a better mom, you know, all those things, a better wife.
Yeah, those are
absolutely
definitely important things. And one of the things that you said that I think is so key is that it's okay to say no. So if you're one of those people listening and you're like, oh, I don't want to disappoint people, I'm here to let you know it's okay to tell people no. And one of the things that I learned to do is when my chief would ask me, can you do this? Can you do this? And I said, I would love to be able to do this for you. However, this is all I can give to you. And I don't want to do a bad job. And I know if I say yes, I'm not going to be able to deliver. And I started to phrase it that way to let them know, you know, I'd love to be able to do that. But this time in my life, I can't take on that extra duty. And this is why. And I found that they were like, oh, I get it, you know, and I'm, you know, maybe at this point when this frees up, I can take on that extra duty. But at right now, you know, I can't do that at the firehouse. So that was something that I had to learn to say. And surprisingly enough, you know, people weren't disappointed. They understood. They're like, I get that. You know, you're working on your doctorate, your kids have this or that, you know, and so, you know, but being able to communicate that and being able to say no is definitely okay. So the next thing that I want to kind of dive into is, you know, I've heard, you know, both Deb and Melissa talk about how important education is, and we know that education is important. And I think something else that's also important is, you know, being connected to certain professional organizations can help us grow as individuals and grow our leadership skills. So Deb, are there certain professional organizations that you're associated with that have helped you grow along the way that you might recommend to some of our men and women listeners?
Sure. Certainly there's your local either county or state organizations. When I became a chief officer, I thought it would be important to get involved in the New Hampshire Association of Fire Chiefs. And I know most states do have that type of organization, and I've been a member of that for quite a few years now. Recently, certainly with the pandemic, I have the honor of sitting on a statewide disaster medical advisory committee. And this group, we were very involved in writing the policy for, you know, when vaccinations come about, what order are we going to give them? Who are we going to give them to? So just by getting involved in some of these committees and organizations, you really can be part of a real global important issue. Certainly nationally, Women in Fire, which is where I met Candace, International Association of Fire Chiefs, and I sit on a couple of subcommittees with the fire chiefs, and I find not only are they great organizations to get sort of that support, certainly mentors are found in some of these organizations, but it's also an opportunity to give back, like I said, on a more global level, whether it's countywide, statewide, or actually nationally. One committee that I was involved in through the IChiefs and through Women in Fire is the National Fire Academy was redoing the executive fire officer curriculum. So I sat on that committee and was able to have some input as a state fire training director on a national program that's quite looked up to. So to be involved in, again, some of those national level things, it's a way of giving back above yourself. But certainly some of the informal mentors that I've met have been through some of these organizations. So again, a way to continually develop yourself.
Yeah. And for our listeners, I want to point out a lot of times when you hear the International Association of Fire Chiefs, you think it's just for chief officers, but it's not. Even if you're a brand new EMS or fire person, you know, you can get involved in it. And there's so many wonderful chief officers, part of that group that are willing to help you grow. And the same thing with Women in Fire. You know, it's a great group, and there's some formal mentoring programs, and they also have some different avenues where you can give back. So yeah, those are great groups to be a part of, Deb. Thank you so much for sharing about them.
What about nursing, Melissa?
We got a lot of professional organizations you can be a part of depending on what your specialty or focus is. So for me, emergency medicine, been in it for about 8-9 years. So I've been a longtime Emergency Nurse Association member. I find actually their journals, their topics, their conferences, all very relevant. So I love that organization. And as a nurse leader, I'm a part of AONL, which is the American Organization of Nurse Leaders. Nationally, it's another really good one. It's a great way for me also to network with other nurse leaders across the nation and hear great best practices. And so those are probably my favorite two. Locally, I'm also involved in the chapters of the Greater Cleveland Organization of Nurse Leaders and OONL, Ohio Organization of Nurse Leaders. So, you know, and obviously American Association of Nurse Practitioners. So depending on what your flavor is, you can find a nurse organization to help support your practice, give you CEs, and help build a network. So I agree, professional organizations, and some of my mentors are people that I really admire in the nursing profession. I've been able to meet. I mean, when you meet them, it feels like a living legend, right? I remember meeting Linda Burns Bolton at the AONL conference. She's received a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Dr. Joyce Fitzpatrick, who is at Case. But I mean, these are just women nurse leaders that I've read about that I've always have desired to meet, and then to be able to meet them. So I think professional organizations really help you network, meet people you never think you're going to meet, and learn a lot. And so looking forward, I think, to over the next year, getting back to some of that conference setting, even if it's in Zoom, or being able to do some in-person, because that's a really valuable thing that I think I've missed over the last year quite a lot, is being able to be that involved in professional organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of conferences, I want to kind of give a plug for EMS Today, which will be held in August. So I hope to see many of our folks listening at EMS Today. I'm excited. I'll be there teaching a class. So come and see me. I would love to meet you, network. But I think, like Melissa said, those conferences are so valuable. And you know, Deb, I know we run into each other. We've run into each other at so many conferences, from, you know, Boston to Indianapolis. FDIC is another great place to network if you're in EMS and fire. So there's so many great conferences to be a part of it and to meet people. And they are a great place to meet mentors. If you go to these conferences, I encourage you, you know, after the speaker's done speaking, you know, connect with them, ask them, hey, would you mind if I could connect with you, if I send you an email and ask you questions? They would love for you to connect, you know, with them. You know, a lot of these people, they get excited to share their knowledge. They want to be supportive of other people coming through the ranks. So don't hesitate to ask as you're networking. So. Well, we're coming to an end here, and I thank you both so much for being part of our show today. I will give you guys one last chance if there's any words of wisdom you'd like to leave with our listeners. So Chief, we'll start with you.
Words of wisdom. Wow. You
yeah. And you go.
Definitely. I have to say courage. Think of that word, courage. Another thing I would say, certainly words of wisdom, is self-care. And don't feel like you're going through this alone. Get involved in organizations, get involved in, you know, some of the national conferences. But when you feel like you're missing something, reach out, find a mentor, find somebody that has that skill or trait or talent that you're looking for. And just ask the question. You'll be surprised how many people are very willing to sit and work with you and help you. So definitely ask the question.
Yeah, thank you.
Melissa, you're up.
Yeah, I would say similarly, be bold. Be patient and persistent, but be bold. You know, hold on to your integrity through anything that you do. And probably have fun with it, right? Try and enjoy what you're doing. And if you can't, find something else to do, you know, so life's a little too short, you know, so enjoy the moments you have. And if you're finding that it's not fulfilling you, then maybe it's time to make a change and be courageous and do something bold as well. So try not to be afraid or discouraged. There's a lot of things that will want to hold you back, but keep on keeping on.
Definitely. Well,
thank good advice.
You. Yeah. Thank you both for being with us. We're very grateful that you took the time to be here.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
We'd like to once again thank our guests and listeners for being with us today. I'm Robin Goldinger.
And I'm Dr. Candace McDonald. Thanks for listening to Another Dose. Until next time.